Hey guys, episode 41, I do believe. Today here on Dev Heads and Hiddle Stoners, I'm Jen.
I am Carrie.
Yeah, we got to work on these visual clues, Carrie. You're not getting it.
I was there. You jumped right into it. You're like, yes.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we are looking at The Tourist this week, and this is one of my favorite movies. I love the plot twists. I love the ins and outs. I love the action. I love the starring actors. You've got Angelina Jolie in this one, and she is fabulous. I don't care what you think about her. She's a damn good actress.
She is.
I mean, she's had some issues. We've all seen the weight go up and down and up and down, and I really wish she'd put a little bit more weight on right now because she's way too skinny. But...
yeah.
I mean...
getting that with Jennifer Connelly, actually, I hated that these women looked perfectly normal and then they go into super diet mode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, come on, people. Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe, the icon of sexy, was a size 10.
Absolutely.
She was a big girl. And she had no problem with it. Neither did anybody else. So, ladies, lay off the diets. Lay off the fads. Come on, be yourself. They don't like it. They can go somewhere else. Tell them to suck one.
Yeah, absolutely. Be you, baby.
I've been everywhere from a size 2 to a size 16. So, over 200 pounds at 5'3", yeah, not good. But, you know, hey, I rock that shit. But so I'm actually not dieting. I'm living more responsibly. So there's no dieting to it. It's just maintaining. Anyway, I'll have to throw up some diet tips on the blog eventually one of these days.
Nice. whatever size you want, I got you covered.
There you go. Hey, and I'm sorry. I don't see a problem with a size 22. I've known some very, very beautiful women that were 22 or bigger. So, you know, y'all just be you and everybody else can adapt. They'll be all right. Anyway, okay, I'm stepping down off my soapbox. The Tourist, we've got... is there anything we need to discuss besides the frigging Amber Heard crap again this week? Amber Heard, Johnny Depp, same old, news at 11. All right, we've done.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No. No, it has been actually pretty darn quiet.
It has, and unfortunately for us, you know... Hiddleston is, once again, he's a clam. He's a clam. He does not like his personal business being out in the public eye, and he maintains, and of course he does have every right to keep his personal life personal. But, you know, me, myself, and I want to know. So, you know, no news about the baby, no news about the wedding, none of that yet. I'm working on it, guys. As soon as I hear something, y'all will know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes, we have definitely got our finger on the pulse.
Oh God, yes. Checking it every evening before I go to sleep and every morning when I get up or when the sun comes up, depending, you know. But insomnia sucks, guys. But yeah, so nothing we need to discuss. All right, The Tourist, good movie. Critics hated it. Absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
They really did. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 20%. 2-0, guys. 20%. They hated it.
Yep.
And let's see, we've got pretty much an all-star cast here. We've got, of course, Johnny Depp is Frank Tupelo. Angelina Jolie is Elise Ward. Those are the two main characters. And then you've got Paul Bettany. Now, this is the movie that I believe Depp and Bettany actually met.
Okay.
I know this is their first collaboration. This is the first movie that they were in together.
Right, right.
Now, after this one, they went on to do Transcendence and Mordecai. Transcendence was 2014, Mordecai was 2015, I believe. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe that's what it was.
Yeah.
I've got them in my notes, so when I run across them, I'll verify.
And this was 2010?
This is 2010.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Now, we've got Timothy Dalton. Guys, 007 fans. Timothy Dalton actually plays the Chief Inspector Jones.
Yeah. You know, and his part was brief, but brilliant.
Oh, it was absolutely. He had two very, very, very important parts.
Yep.
Two very important
scenes.
In the beginning
and the end.
Exactly. And, you know, really, 007, that's usually his action lines, is right in the beginning and right at the end.
That's right.
So, yeah. Rufus Sewell plays the Englishman.
Yeah, didn't see a whole lot of him, and he's a whole lot of star power.
You saw him, but only if you were looking for him.
Right.
He was in almost every scene.
Yeah.
But you had to look for him.
He's a great actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was just amazing. And then we've got Stephen Burkhoff.
All right.
Burkhoff, I'm sorry. Played Reginald Shaw. Am I pronouncing his name wrong? Stephen Burkhoff? Burkhoff? He was the Bond villain in Octopussy.
Oh my god. Right. And he chewed up the scenery like an angry goat. Amazing villain.
Yeah. Oh man.
Amazing.
I swear to God, I would probably cross the street if I visited Hollywood and saw him coming the same side of the street I was on. I would probably cross it just so I wouldn't have to get too close to him. He scared the hell out of me in that movie.
You know, regardless of the critics, I think that everyone agrees he did a fantastic job. Great. One of the great villains of 2010.
If I'm not mistaken, that's part of what gave him a 20 instead of a 0.
Right, yeah.
Now, funny thing is, we've got two Bond characters, one hero and one villain. However,
right.
Timothy Dalton was the fourth James Bond. Stephen Burkhoff, how do you pronounce his name? Am I pronouncing it correctly? Burkhoff?
I believe it's Burkhoff, yes.
Burkhoff, okay. Yeah, see, you can get the accent, I can't.
Yeah, it's European.
He did not come on scene to play a Bond villain until 1983's Octopussy, and that was with the sixth James Bond, which was Roger Moore.
Right. Right,
so,
before,
both
right
of them,
before Timothy Dalton's tenure.
No, after. Timothy was number four, Roger Moore was number six.
Mm-mm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-mm.
Look it up.
No, wait a minute. Roger Moore was number three. And then Timothy Dalton replaced Roger Moore.
Okay, so where am I getting my faulty information from?
Because
I got this straight off of one of the movie sites, the Octopussy site, actually.
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, look that one up. Because if I'm
sure,
I definitely wanna correct that if I'm wrong.
Sure.
And you should know, because I know you're a big Bond fan. So.
Well, that's why I ended up.
Yeah.
Doing it, like, really, really quick.
Yeah, but yeah.
Like, real James Bond film. Here,
right. But if you go, I got my info from the actual movie site, from the Octopussy movie site, so.
Yeah, so Sean Connery.
It was Sean Connery?
Sean Connery. He was Dr. No all the way to Diamonds Are Forever. Oh, no, wait a minute.
Technical difficulties here. Okay, you look at...
All right, no. Okay, so there was a guy before James Bond was even famous. That was James Bond in a television short that was in like 1956.
Okay.
But the film James Bond's in order, it's okay. Sean Connery.
Look up the Octopussy site.
Yeah.
And check that site. That's the one that I went to. I want you to check it and tell me if it is correct, because you would know.
Roger Moore was three.
Okay, so obviously wherever I got my information was wrong.
Yeah, your information is absolutely and completely incorrect.
I don't know how that happened. I usually... God, okay, mark it down on your calendars, guys. Jen got screwed with research.
Yep,
that never happens.
Connery, and then it was George Lazenby for one movie because he was kind of an asshole. And then it was Roger Moore, and then it was Timothy Dalton. And then it was Pierce Brosnan.
Okay. So who was number six?
And after Pierce Brosnan, it was Daniel Craig.
Okay, it was not Daniel Craig. I know that, and it was not Pierce Brosnan. I know that. So obviously, my info is like screwed all the way around. So anyway, I will get back with that when we have time to do a little bit more research, and I will touch base on that one next show so I can correct that. Just so, thank you very much, Carrie, for calling bullshit on that one.
Well, we just started a war.
Oh, no. Not having any wars.
Well, you have the official, kind of quote-unquote official James Bond movies, and it does go Sean Connery, George Lazenby, Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton. But you also have these kind of one-offs that were not approved by the estate.
Got it.
Ian Fleming, and so you've got Woody Allen... And David Niven doing a Casino Royale movie in 1967, 1968.
Lord.
So, and David Niven played, quote-unquote, James Bond.
Oh, boy.
And then you have the TV appearance, and it was a black and white TV appearance. And so I guess if you wanted to frame it that way, you're incorrect. But let me assure you, ladies and gentlemen, those are bastard James Bonds. That's literally like Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones playing Darth Vader.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Anyway.
But yeah, give me just one second. I'm going to check this right quick, like quick, fast, and in a hurry if my machine will cooperate here.
Barry, and once again, we've got to do a shameless plug for our sponsor, Barry Reese.
Absolutely.
Thank you, of course, for the facilities, and for goodness sakes, when you go to the website, check out Barry's site. But Barry, I have got to get Barry on for a James Bond podcast. Because the man loves James Bond.
Yep, Roger Moore was the James Bond in Octopussy.
That's right.
So,
the number three James Bond.
Apparently the number is the wrong thing, not the actor, it's himself. So.
Yeah, it's the number.
Okay, so I it was a small faux pas, but still a faux pas.
It's just like with Star Wars people, Harry Potter people, you make a faux pas. You've got to point it out.
Absolutely, I know. Oh, yeah. Yes, but you know also that I have to defend myself as well.
We're academic people. We will back it up with research.
Absolutely. All right. Okay, guys. Now, Tom Cruise was the original, supposed to be the original Frank Tupelo. Yes. Have you noticed how many times Johnny Depp steps in when Tom Cruise bows out? Have you noticed how many times that happens? Quite often. But see, it was Tom Cruise. Now, he had some issues, scheduling conflicts and stuff. And then Sam Worthington was pulled in to play Frank Tupelo. Sam Worthington, the guy in Avatar.
Yeah,
him.
Yeah, right.
He was pulled in. He left due to, quote, creative differences. So,
he was a jerk.
Basically meaning somebody was an asshole somewhere and people just could not get along.
Yeah, another reason Sam Worthington.
It was a one and done.
Right.
Yeah. However, Worthington was not the only one who walked off set. The director, Von Donnersmarck, also left when Sam Worthington did. However, he ended up coming back and finishing the movie, or doing the movie. So, the director came back. But, yeah. That's when they finally settled on Johnny Depp. And I can't imagine a better person for the role. I mean, I can't see Tom Cruise playing that character. I just can't.
I can, but it would have been a totally different film.
Okay, so basically instead of a 20, Rotten Tomatoes would have given it a 0?
Well, it would have just been like another Mission Impossible movie, maybe, or something.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, and guess who the original Elise Ward was supposed to be?
It wasn't Jolie.
It was not Jolie.
Who was it?
Charlize Theron. Now, I can see her. I can see her in that part. I could see her in that role.
Damn it. Things unrealized. I would have...
I think we just gave Carrie a headache.
Damn. What could have been... You know, I will take a pass on Tom Cruise. Charlize Theron in that what if kind of thing, I would have loved to have seen.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen her in those outfits.
Yeah.
Especially the negligee in the bedroom scene. Whoa.
Absolutely.
Gave you a nice little mental picture there, didn't I?
I've seen that mental picture hundreds of times.
Oh, honey, I know.
Movie, but
We're not going to discuss what you do with those mental pictures, so.
on a side note, we talk about these... 6 degrees of separation with Johnny Depp, and has he met these actors and that sort of thing. Do you know if Depp has met Tom Cruise? I wonder what that meeting possibly would have been like.
I can see it, and I can see Tom Cruise being completely egotistical, and Johnny being completely just. Well, no, I can see Johnny insulting him so many times in such a way that he didn't realize he was insulted until the next day, going,
right.
Wait, did he call me a fucking asshole?
Right.
I could see it. I definitely could see it.
Yeah, I'm glad we got Depp in the role.
Most definitely. I can't imagine another actor. Even, I'm sorry, my British friend, even Hiddleston, I cannot see playing that role as it needed to be played for this movie.
No, he was actually handsome. He was, you know, quirky.
A little odd, a little off.
A little bit off. And, you know, I liked Angelina Jolie. And she can pull off the classy. She pulled it off.
Oh, yeah.
But Johnny Depp pulled it off.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, man. Yes, he did. Played the role to perfection. And guys, I will let you know this one thing. Normally, I don't care about spoilers. Normally, we do spoilers all the time on this show, talking about the end of it, talking about how it, you know, the final outcome of it and everything. We're not doing that with this movie. Because there is a very, very, very good twist. It's just awesome cool. And I just refuse to ruin that for anyone who has not seen the movie. So that's one thing you will not hear on tonight's show is a how the movie ends.
Kind of when thing. They first met on the train and they had that conversation.
Oh.
And that exchange that they had. If we gave you spoilers, it would ruin that beautiful, fantastic first scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Invite me to dinner, Frank. Would you like to join me for dinner? Women don't like questions. Join me for dinner. Too forceful. Too demanding.
Yes.
join me for dinner? Another question. Wait, I got it. Hang on. I'm having dinner. If you care to join me.
It actually seemed very Johnny Depp, like the right man. I think he kind of put himself in that.
He does that in every role that he has. He says, if you don't put part of yourself in the role, it's not acting, it's just lying.
Yes.
And that is a direct quote. It's one of my favorites.
And I think that you do kind of, I really do think that you see that. There's no makeup, there's no fantasy setting. You know,
it's just a guy on a train.
An American guy, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a guy on a train. Mm-hmm. Going on holiday. And boy, he gets a holiday he'll never forget. I'm telling you what.
Woo! Okay.
Chased by mobsters, friggin' locked up by dirty cops, rescued by a mysterious woman he met on a train. I mean, hell yeah, sign me up for the next vacation.
The chase sequence that he did on the rooftops.
Oh, yes. Awesome. In his pajamas, barefoot.
Yes.
Barefoot. Yes. I cannot imagine how hot those freaking tiles had to have been. Oh. I mean, I'm sorry. I go barefoot all the time. I hate shoes. I don't like them. I would rather be barefoot.
But, you know, he was a vulnerable tourist. And, you know, you could see him kind of pulling it off. And yet still, it was action-packed.
Certainly was. I mean, Pirates of the Caribbean notwithstanding, guys. That part notwithstanding. Most of Johnny Depp's movies are more drama. They're not really a lot of action. There's, you know, not a lot of get up and go kind of. You know.
Johnny was definitely in motion in this movie.
Oh, yes. He had to be or he would be dead.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he did. This one, well, I can't even think of another one to compare it to another Johnny Depp movie besides the Pirates movies to compare it to.
Maybe, but it was too short in Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Yeah, that final scene, yeah.
Yeah, and it was the final scene. You know, it was like short bursts of him, like, getting off a couple of shots, and Grady got through it.
Right.
And he was moving. I mean,
he was constantly in motion in this one, unless he was handcuffed to something. But yeah, that was, I mean, it really was action-packed to some. Another reason why I really like this movie, Johnny, you know, most of his roles are more cerebral.
Yes.
But the man can move. I don't give a damn how old he gets. The man can move.
Yeah, he's in good shape.
He is. Oh, and speaking of which is what's really funny is the scene when he catches her at the ball and asks her to dance.
He's a natural.
Johnny is terrified of dancing.
I would have never guessed that.
That is the one thing that scares him to death, is having to dance. He hates it.
Well, he pulled it off.
He definitely pulled it off. I can't believe they talked him into it. But he pulled it off.
Gentlemen, that being said, Johnny Depp can dance if you were ever wondering.
Oh, I mean, anybody can dance, you know. But yeah, Johnny Depp can move, guys. As if you didn't already know this, if you're listening to me. Now, the director was asked why he came back to the film. Because he had walked out with Sam Worthington over creative differences. And he said, I don't have a direct quote, but basically he simply could not resist making a movie with two of the most charming actors in the world in the world's most beautiful location.
Yes.
The movie is filmed on location in both Paris, France, and Italy.
And, you know, we really can't talk about this movie unless we talk about the fantastic directing and the cinematography. It was a sumptuous, beautiful movie.
Oh, and now, I have a little bit of information about the cinematography as well.
Oh, please.
Now, the director actually wrote his thesis for film school on, oh God, what was it? The Incredible, what is it? Shit. I'm trying to find my notes. Sorry. And of course, I'm not finding it. Hang on. Here we go. All right. The Talented Mr. Ripley is what he did his thesis on for film school. And he made it a point. He wrote extensively about the contribution made to the film by the cinematographer, John Seale. Talked about just how incredible the man was and, you know, the way that the film flowed and it was all up to this. You know, he just went on and on about the, you know, the impact that John Seale's vision had on the film itself and on the story to the film. So you have to imagine the look on the man's face when John Seale agreed to be the cinematographer for this film.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep, John Seale was a cinematographer, and he is incredible. Some of the best visual movies I've ever seen are John Seale.
Yeah, Seale, and the Seale with an E on the end.
Yes.
Yeah, he did The English Patient. I mean, he's done just...
Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yep.
Yeah.
Children of a Lesser God. He did
that
The Mosquito Coast. He did Gorillas in the Mist.
Yup.
He did Dead Poets Society.
Yes, he did.
Save Angels.
Yeah.
He actually worked on a Harry Potter movie, I believe.
Oh, really? Which one?
Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
That would be the Sorcerer's Stone here in America. And that's number one. Very first one.
What was the original book title? Was it
The Philosopher's Stone? But that
Stone?
Philosopher's Stone in England. They changed it to The Sorcerer's Stone to bring the book and the story to America.
That's some interesting right there.
Well, I mean, it's a book about magic. You look at the title, it says The Philosopher's Stone. You don't understand it. Well, here in America, you don't understand what the hell they're talking about.
Gotcha.
Pardon me, guys. But apparently the words are interchangeable in certain contexts in England. So, but yeah, that's the deal with that one. But yeah, he was absolutely thrilled that his idol, basically, he was able to work with. And this is a very, very young director. This guy, I believe he is a year younger than me, which would have made him, oh, let's see.
Twenty-seven?
When he directed this movie?
Yeah, that's young.
If I'm doing my math correctly. Let's see. Yeah. Because turned 20 in the 90s and 30 in the 2000s. So, yeah. 27 years old. Very, very cool.
Good Lord. The guy is literally some 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, he's born in 1975, right?
Right.
Matter of fact, he just had a birthday, April 3rd or August 3rd. Is it? Am I remembering that correctly?
He was born in the 2nd of May, 1973. He's
2nd
29.
Of May. Okay, his birthday was August 3rd then. Somebody I looked up had a birthday of August 3rd. I thought it was the director, but apparently I'm wrong.
Born in Cologne, West Germany in 1973.
Yep. 73, year before I was born. Yeah, I was thinking he was a year younger than me, but apparently it's the opposite. He's a year older. Oh, yeah. So, anyway, they were on a time crunch for this movie. Once they got Johnny Depp to sign on, they were on a time crunch. Depp had a very, very short window before he had to go and film, I'm not sure which other movie it was, but he had prior commitments that he could not back out of. So they were on a time crunch to begin with. Then they couldn't find a director because this one had left with with Worthington. So when Dondersmark came back, when Von Dondersmark came back, he was on a serious time crunch. He rewrote the entire script in 2 weeks. Shot the film from first camera roll to last in 58 days. Less than 2 months, he shot this film.
Wow. They did not have a lot of time to enjoy the scenery.
They did not. That was the whole reason Angelina Jolie said yes. She said she had to admit it. She figured it'd be a nice, quick, easy shoot in Italy, so... Ayo. But yeah, oh. All right. If you think about the movie, how many days does this movie take?
I'm going to take a shot.
I mean, think about it. They meet on the train.
Right.
And then they spend the night in the hotel. That's one night.
Yes. Right.
Okay. He gets chased across the rooftops.
Yeah.
He gets sold by the cops. That's the second night. And then he meets her at the ball on the third evening. That's it. That's the whole... That's it. Less than 3 days. Less than 3 days. Yep. Guess how many outfits Angelina goes through in this 3 days?
How many?
12! Woman wears 12 different outfits in this movie. I think Johnny, including his pajamas... I think he wears three.
That's the train ride outfit slash when he arrives.
Right.
The pajamas. Uh-huh.
And the tux. That's it.
Yep.
Damn them bitches and them having to change clothes every 5 minutes. But hey, granted, she looks so good in every one of those outfits. Oh, yeah, and... Anybody who's, you know, thinking about buying a collar for a friend or what have you, or what have you? Yeah, I want the one Angelina's wearing. Yeah, what would you say that one was? About, probably $500,000
$600,000? Oh, yeah, sure.
The sapphire and diamond collar?
Yeah, the collar was... The collar was constant. That was something that really, really stood out. I'm like, okay, you're making a statement piece with that.
Oh,
but,
man.
You know, you can say what you want about Angelina Jolie, but she wears clothes well. And I actually remember distinctively. And I guess this is, you know, the cinematographer, the director, the costume designer, but her first outfit, the white dress. Oh,
it wasn't white. It was a crew. It was not white, it was eggshell.
Okay.
It was cream.
Oh.
Gotcha. The proper name is probably ecru, E-C-R-U.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's an off-white.
Gotcha.
She would not look good in pure white. Oh. Nobody looks good in pure white. There's only one day out of your entire life you should wear white.
Yep.
Your funeral.
Oh my god. And then they put you on the ground and seal you in it.
Exactly. Oh god, no, let me rethink that, because then you'll be wearing white for the rest of your life.
For the
rest of your unlife. So yeah. No. But yeah,
she looked amazing in that movie.
Yes, yeah, she did. And you're right, that beige outfit with the what was it, like a peach sash that she had tied in the back?
It was near red, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very distinctive, and you were laughing at me when we were were watching it, but Johnny and that first outfit looked really, you know, it was realistic. It was something a tourist would wear, but he was really dapper with the corduroy coat and the...
I was not laughing at you because you said you wanted one.
I want that jacket.
You would not look
good. Looked great.
You would not look good in that color. And that brown? No. You'd need either a blue or a gray.
Right.
Yeah, like a baby blue, almost a baby blue, kind of a little softer than a baby blue.
Well, the man wears clothes, really. You could probably put him in pink, and I'll bet he'd look fantastic.
Actually, I have seen him in pink, and he does look good.
Well, where does he
look
in pink?
Paparazzi.
And he's just wearing it out?
He was on the beach.
Yeah. Oh.
He was on the beach with, God, I'm trying to think. I don't think he was not with his kids. So it was not that, but maybe Kate Moss?
Okay. On the beach, that makes sense.
Yeah. More than likely on his private island because there was nobody else around. So, yeah, apparently somebody has a really, really, really good telescopic lens. But, yeah. And I was right. Yep, Mordecai was 2015, Transcendence 2014. Yep, and I'm hoping they'll do more together because those two are just, whether they're playing opposites or whether they're playing as allies, those two are funny as hell together.
Yes, great chemistry between these two actors.
Oh my God. Oh, in the scene where they finally, Elise is in the apartment, the gangsters are in the apartment, and they've got Tupelo locked in the police van. That scene, when he puts the bag over his head and he's like, he finally takes it off. He's like, you're fine. What you are is a moron. Or does he say moron or idiot? But that scene, the whole, you know, you're okay, but what you are is it. All of that was all just spur of the moment. He just popped off with it, and they liked it, so they kept it in the movie.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. The director actually did say a couple of times that maybe 90% of this movie was unscripted. It was like they just took the scene and ran with it, and it just worked.
You can see it.
Well, it worked really well for them. I'm not sure about the relationship between Paul Bettany and Angelina Jolie, but it appears that they probably know each other as well. They just work so well together. But Paul Bettany's character, again, is one that I would probably cross the street to avoid.
Right.
Oh, man. I've seen him play a character so good he could pick up Thor's hammer. Not this guy.
Not this guy.
Whoa. Man, was he just hateful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know,
and thing is,
it was a great role.
It was, but he wasn't a bad guy. He was actually one of the good guys.
Yeah.
But he was just bad at it.
You know, he was obsessed, and the obsession, like you said, he had been following this guy for 3 years.
Yeah, Alexander Pierce is the one that the cops are after, and the mobsters.
Right.
And at the very beginning of the movie, Angelina gets a note from Alexander Pierce, who was her lover, for her to get on the train and find someone of his height and build and make them believe that it's him. So this is how Frank gets involved with all of this crap. He's a math teacher from the community college in
Wisconsin. Right.
Not even like a name school. No, the community college in Wisconsin. He is a math teacher.
bien.
But yeah, he gets involved in all kinds of crap. I mean to tell you. But she taught him how to pick handcuffs, though. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Remember, because she picked his on the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and that scene, that chase scene with the boats. There was an Italian police officer on duty and on set the entire time that film. And it took a couple of different times to film that scene. Where the boats are chasing each other and they're firing the weapons at it and everything and da 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 da. Well, there was a cop on scene and they're on set monitoring the boats to make sure that neither one of the boats went over their strictly reinforced speed limits.
Right. Well, they were in Venice, right? Was it Venice?
Yeah, Venice.
Yeah, you know, well, that's kind of a delicate ecosystem. You can't just, like, blast through.
Delicate ecosystem, my ass. They had to give the actors and the film crew who went into the water antibiotics for 2 weeks before filming that scene because the water was so disgusting.
Right, yes. Yeah, that being said, it's basically New York City on a massive canal system.
Yeah, so. It's New York City sewers acting as main streets. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it.
Venice has a reputation.
I would not have wanted to be Johnny Depp in that film. Oh, because he's one of the ones that goes in the water. Remember?
Yep.
In the boat scene where he's handcuffed to the bar?
I do love how, and this will kind of be like my wrap up, just for me personally, but I love how in the past, in 2010, we have a... kind of a connection between this movie and the Marvel movies. And it's not because Angelina Jolie was in The Eternals.
Absolutely not.
But, so, John Seale, this amazing cinematographer that inspired our boy here at The Tourist. John Seale did the cinematography for Fury Road.
Okay.
Mad Max movie with Charlize Theron.
Oh, Charlize Theron, there again.
Well,
she was supposed to be in this one.
Yeah, well, to further it, this cinematographer is going to be the cinematographer for Furioso, which is the sequel that they're doing for Mad Max Fury Road.
They're doing another sequel for a Mad Max movie?
They are.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you have a young Charlize Theron, and, you know, she was Furiosa. And they have her in this prequel movie played by, oh, geez, what's her name? She was in The Queen's Gambit.
Hmm. I can see her face, but I cannot call her name to save my life.
Joy, I think, is her last name. But to make a long story short, she's going to be playing the young antagonist that was in Fury Road, Charlize Theron's character, Furiosa.
Nice.
The villain that was in that movie, as I said, this is a prequel, is going to be played by Chris Hemsworth. It's a Fox project.
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. Let me pause you just for a second. I have still shots from Love and Thunder. Ladies, and some of you gentlemen too out there, I'm sure. If you have not seen this movie, it is worth it just to see Hemsworth tied friggin' David, or what's his name with the hair? Samson and Delilah style.
Bare
ass naked. And he got a pretty butt. Woo! Let me tell you.
That's him and not a body double axis problem.
Oh, no, it is him.
Yeah.
It's him.
He's like, no, I'll do it.
I said his ass is perfect. It just needs like a bite mark right there on the hip. Hey, I can help out with that. Certainly, I have no problem doing that at all.
It would break her teeth on that ass.
You know, no, his ass actually is nice and soft. He's got a really, really cuddly ass.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Okay, so he's a rock on the front side. Just flip him over. He'll be fine. Use the ass as a pillow. I always said, you know, he's really pretty. I just wouldn't, you know, it's kind of hard to cuddle up to a rock. Just flip him over. It'll be fine. Who knew, man?
Absolutely, yeah, totally. Who knew?
Well, now we do. Now he will never get any sleep. All right, so I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, that was literally it.
Oh, okay. All right. So the villain is going to be played by Chris Hemsworth?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we will have to keep an eye out for this one, the sequel to the Mad Max sequel. So.
Right. Definitely. And apparently a few Marvel people are involved with this, which is exciting because you're essentially combining Mad Max people that have been involved since the beginning of the earliest Mel Gibson movies.
With Marvel, and that is incredible.
And a massive, apparently $65 million budget.
Wow. Oh, speaking of, I did not get into that. The budget for this movie was $100 million. The critics said that they were insane. $100 million on this movie? Are you kidding me? Not going to happen. But they spent it. They threw it out there. Box office for this movie?
How much?
$278.8 million.
Okay, so they made that back.
Oh, so they made it back double. Mm-hmm. Well, almost triple. But yeah, the critics hated it. The fans loved it. And what's really funny is, let's see, I had a couple of different things. And now, of course, I can't. The spy novel that he's reading while he's on the train.
Yeah, the Berlins.
A lot of times they use real books. This time they did not. This is a fake, made up cover. This book does not exist. It is the fictitious book, The Berlin Vendetta, and it's written by the fictitious author, Charles Torbett. Torbett. T-O-R-B-E-T-T. Now, the funny thing is, being in the movie industry, as soon as this book became a prop, they found out there is actually a Charles Torbett. He's a department property manager for the industry. So it was not created for him. He just happened to have the same name.
Oh, okay. I thought they were maybe doing it off a guy in the book.
No, once they created this book, somebody said, hey, you know, there's this guy that has that name.
Yeah.
Well, it's like watching that freaking Ghost Hunter show, and this girl comes up and says her name is Jennifer Hurst. I'm like, excuse me? Yeah, that's not me. But yeah, very odd. So, okay, guys, we are riding on about 50 minutes, and I know we've got some time constraints. I really do apologize. It's a short episode. We are going to try to get back to the hour 10, hour 15 that we've been doing here. We just got to get some things. We got school starting for the kids. We've got work starting for some of us. We've got various things going on, so hopefully we can get everything situated and squared away, and within, you know, the next little while, we'll be able to get back to our normal length episodes. But until then, anything, let's see, deathheadshuddlestoners@yahoo.com. DepHeadsHiddlestoners.com to see our blog, or you can go through BarryReese.net and click on the link. You can find us on Facebook, Dep Heads and Hiddlestoners group. You can find us on Instagram, when I can get it to work. And you can find us on, of course, the blog. Send us some emails. Let us know what's going on. If you've ever met the guys, one or the other, give us the information. Hey, we'd love to hear it. We'd love to share it. Any ideas that you have, by all means, send them to us. We are going to be doing some minor to major changes over the next 4 or 6 months or so. I have to discuss them with my co-host first. But we're definitely gonna be making some changes to the podcast, to the not the content, guys. Not the content. We are still gonna focus on our two main men. But that we're gonna add some things, we're gonna see what flows, we're gonna see what works. So you know, keep with us, give us some feedback, let us know what you think. Anything else, Carrie?
No, that covers it well.
Okay, next week, part two of... Okay, we're going to hope part two is the end. It may be like Lamb Chop song. This is a song that doesn't end. You know, that one. But we are doing the next part of the Thor Ragnarok movie.
Yes.
So, and that means I get the week off because I've already done the research.
What?
Yeah, well, I told you. That's why we're doing a part two. And possibly a part three. Maybe even a part four. We might even make it a mini-series.
We'll see how it rolls. That'd be pretty interesting.
All right, guys. Well, I guess that is good night for now. And like I said, I do believe this is episode 41. We're edging up there. We're getting close to our year. Yay! 52 episodes makes a year. If we don't miss any more, we'll see you guys around about first part of September for the year mark.
Wow. Amazing.
Yes. I know. So anyway, if you can't be good at it. And if that doesn't work, name it after me.
Okay.
See you later, guys.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.